quickly be reminded that it has very considerable mass. Altogether, there are about 5,200 million million tons of air around us, 25 million tons for every square mile of the planet, a not inconsequential volume. When you get millions of tons of atmosphere rushing past at 30 or 40 miles an hour, it's hardly a surprise that limbs snap and roof tiles go flying. As Anthony Smith notes, a typical weather front may consist of 750 million tons of cold air pinned beneath a billion tons of warm air. Hardly a wonder that the result is at times meteorologically exciting. Certainly, there is no shortage of energy in the world above our heads. One thunderstorm, it has been calculated, can contain an amount of energy equivalent to 4 days' use of electricity for the whole United States. In the right conditions, storm clouds can rise to heights of 6 to 10 miles and contain updrafts and downdrafts of 100 miles an hour. These are often side by side, which is why pilots don't want to fly through them. In all, the internal turmoil particles within the cloud pick up electrical charges. For reasons not entirely understood, the lighter particles tend to become positively charged and to be wafted by air currents to the top of the cloud. The heavier particles linger at the base, accumulating negative charges. These negatively charged particles have a powerful urge to rush to the positively charged Earth, and good luck to anything that gets in their way. A bolt of lightning travels at 270,000 miles an hour and can heat the air around it to a decidedly crisp 50,000 degrees Fahrenheit, several times hotter than the surface of the sun. At any one moment, 1,800 thunderstorms are in progress around the globe, some 40,000 a day. Day and night across the planet, every second, about 100 lightning bolts hit the ground. The sky is a lively place. Much of our knowledge of what goes on up there is surprisingly recent. Jet streams, usually located about 30,000 to 35,000 feet up, can bowl along at up to 180 miles an hour and vastly influence weather systems over whole continents. Yet their existence wasn't suspected until pilots began to fly into them during the Second World War. Even now, a great deal of atmospheric phenomena is barely understood. A form of wave motion, popularly known as clear air turbulence, occasionally enlivens airplane flights. About 20 such incidents a year are serious enough to need reporting. They are not associated with cloud structures or anything else that can be detected visually or by radar. They are just pockets of startling turbulence in the middle of tranquil skies. In a typical incident, a plane en route from Singapore to Sydney was flying over central Australia in calm conditions when it suddenly fell 300 feet, enough to fling unsecured people against the ceiling. 12 people were injured, one seriously. No one knows what causes such disruptive cells of air. The process that moves air around in the atmosphere is the same process that drives the internal engine of the planet, namely convection. Moist, warm air from the equatorial regions rises until it hits the barrier of the tropopause and spreads out. As it travels away from the equator and cools, it sinks. When it hits bottom, some of the sinking air looks for an area of low pressure to fill and heads back for the equator, completing the circuit. At the equator, the convection process is generally stable and the weather predictably fair, but in temperate zones the patterns are far more seasonal, localized, and random, which results in an endless battle between systems of high pressure air and low. Low-pressure systems are created by rising air, which conveys water molecules into the sky, forming clouds and eventually rain. Warm air can hold more moisture than cool air, which is why tropical and summer storms tend to be the heaviest. Thus, low areas tend to be associated with clouds and rain, and highs generally spell sunshine and fair weather. When two such systems meet, it often becomes manifest in the clouds. For instance, stratus clouds, those unlovable, featureless sprawls that give us our overcast skies, happen when moisture-bearing updrafts lack the oomph to break through a level of more stable air above and instead spread out, like smoke hitting a ceiling. Indeed, if you watch a smoker sometime, you can get a very good idea of how things work by watching how smoke rises from a cigarette in a still room. At first, it goes straight up. This is called a laminar flow, if you need to impress anyone, and then it spreads out in a diffused, wavy layer. the greatest supercomputer in the world, taking measurements in the most carefully controlled environment, cannot tell you what forms these ripplings will take. So you can imagine the difficulties that confront meteorologists when they try to predict such motions in a spinning, windy, large-scale world. What we do know is that because heat from the sun is unevenly distributed, differences in air pressure arise on the planet. Air can't abide this, so it rushes around trying to equalize things everywhere. Wind is simply the air's way of trying to keep things in balance. Air always flows from areas of high pressure to areas of low pressure, as you would expect. Think of anything with air under pressure, a balloon or an air tank, and think how insistently that pressured air wants to get someplace else. And the greater the discrepancy in pressures, the faster the wind blows. Incidentally, wind speeds, like most things that accumulate, grow exponentially. So a wind blowing at 200 miles an hour is not simply 10 times stronger than a wind blowing at 20 miles an hour, but 100 times stronger, and hence that much more destructive. Introduce several million tons of air to this accelerator effect, and the result can be exceedingly energetic. A tropical hurricane can release in 24 hours as much energy as a rich, medium-sized nation like Britain or France uses in a year. The impulse of the atmosphere to seek equilibrium was first suspected by Edmund Halley, the man who was everywhere, and elaborated upon in the 18th century by his fellow Briton George Hadley, who saw that rising and falling columns of air tended to produce cells, known ever since as Hadley cells. Though a lawyer by profession, Hadley had a keen interest in the weather. He was, after all, English, and also suggested a link between his cells, the Earth's spin, and the apparent deflections of air that give us our trade winds. However, it was an engineering professor at the École Polytechnique in Paris, Gustave Gaspard de Coriolis, who worked out the details of these interactions in 1835, and thus we call it the Coriolis effect. Coriolis' other distinction at the school was to introduce water coolers, which are still known there as Corios, apparently.